Welcome to another edition of The Brand Called You. Today I have a very good friend and a very, very senior journalist, Vivek Sinha, with me. Vivek, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me away.
Thank you. Vivek is the founder and editor-in-chief of News Intervention, which is an absolutely fascinating show. He's an MA in psychology from Delhi, BSc in agriculture from BHU. He's a senior journalist and a columnist, and most importantly for me, he's an author and he's written a book, Chip in the Madrasa. So Vivek, tell me a little bit about your early career.
Well, I started off my career as a journalist with Times of India.
Okay.
And from Times of India, I moved on to Deccan Chronicle. It's a South Hyderabad-based daily. So I was covering business and finance all through for Deccan Chronicle. And then from Deccan Chronicle, for the longest period of my career, I was with Hindustan Times.
Okay.
So from Hindustan Times, I quit. And like 5 years back, I wanted to make documentaries. I wanted to make films. I wanted to dabble into writing too much. So I've made documentaries. I've written the novel that you just now talked about, The Chip in the Madrasa.
And we'll talk about that in the show.
Yes, yes. So this is what had been my journey. Yeah.
Okay, wonderful. So let's talk about News Intervention. Tell me a little bit about this venture and what are the subjects that you like to cover in this?
Well, after spending almost two decades into journalism, the biggest brands of the country, the Times of India and Hindustan Times, I always felt that there are issues, there are topics which somehow get missed out into the cacophony of news and all. So, and also, journalism itself was going through a lot of churn, change, which I found very, very disturbing. So I thought instead of backbitching and instead of feeling helpless, let me intervene in the field of news. And that's how this name News Intervention came in.
Okay.
So we wanted to be factual, we wanted to be fearless, and most importantly, we wanted to be the voice of unheard.
Okay.
Subjects, the topics which are left uncovered, that we wanted to bring it out into the public domain. So topics about Kashmir, we've all known about Kashmir and all, but there are several stories from Kashmir, the other side of the story, that never come out. So if you go to the website, those issues are there. Balochistan is one of the important things.
In fact, I heard your interview and it's nice to have you on the other side now,
yes,
chatting with me. But I heard your interview on with the Kashmir activist, and I thought that was fascinating.
Yes, yes. So there are so many people. I mean, whenever we talk about Kashmir, we get the same old faces, same old politicians to bring out the various facets about Kashmir. But that's not the situation down there.
Correct.
The ground people who are connected with the grassroots level, they need to be brought out into the mainstream. And that's what News Intervention is doing.
You know, I must compliment you on that, because what we are doing with The Brand Called You is also bringing stories of the thousands of people who are not spoken about.
Oh, wow.
You know, otherwise, if you look from the corporate world, startup world, there are only 15, 20 people who are always in the news.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So we've said, no, none of those big names.
Mm-hmm.
We'll bring the thousands of stories that are there, not just in India, but around the world.
Yes, yes. Because India is a very vast and a very great country. So
correct.
N number of stories are there.
Correct, correct, correct. So tell me, Vivek, after 20 years in journalism, with so much experience, what is your view on how journalism is changing or has changed?
Well, see, when I joined as a rookie reporter in Times of India, things were very controlled in a way that a select group of people, select group of journalists used to decide what you are going to read the next morning. What will be the national agenda? What is going to be discussed? But over a period of time, thanks to digital media and then later on the social media as well, the flow of information has democratized. So even if you do not find an avenue in the big brands, I'm nothing against the big brand because I started my career with them. But if you feel that your stories are not going over there, the views that you want to bring out, it's not being taken up by them, you still have avenues. So this is the biggest change that has happened. Mm-hmm. And some of the very fantastic stories have come through the smaller brands,
right,
the smaller new age digital media organizations, mm-hmm, and social media as well. So this is something which has changed during my active journalism days. This has happened.
That's fascinating. And not only that, but I also believe that, you know, there were superstar journalists.
Yes.
Who would virtually decide what my opinion should be.
Yes, yes.
As a reader. because they would give their opinion in the morning in a newspaper, we would read it and we'll form our opinion. But as you said, after democratizing journalism, I have the right to form my own opinion.
Yes, yes. You have, the most important thing, you have avenues to reach out to the people, to the entire world for that matter.
Correct.
You are connected to the entire world. Like if you upload a story, simple on a blog, on your own personal blog itself, it reaches out to anywhere in the world. Whoever is able to understand, comprehend that particular language in which you are writing, they can read out and that goes out all across.
Correct. And also, I don't know what your view is on hundreds of thousands of people being able to comment on something that I may have written. So how does it affect from the time of journalists who would write something, either put it out in print or on television? Now it goes on to social media and thousands of people are giving positive or negative comments. See, what happens to the journalist?
See, it was there earlier on also. But earlier on, it used to be letters to the editor. They used to come to our office. We used to sometimes have a look at it. We may reject it. I mean, journalists had ways to, in a way, isolate themselves from that kind of opinion which the readers had. But now what has happened is that those opinion are, those comments are also available to other readers.
Right.
So that has brought a big change, the sea change into the mindset. Mm-hmm. So earlier, if you were not happy with a particular comment, you can simply reject it. But now you know that this particular comment is also being read by another set of readers, which you may or may not like. Mm-hmm. So you have to take into account those comments and bring it into your thought process. Correct. This is what has changed a lot.
Very good. So, you know, you just spoke a little bit about social media. Give me your views on how social media is changing journalism.
See, social media has become an avenue for the common people to write and report what used to be a kind of a preserve of the journalist or the reporter on the ground. So earlier on, when I was I was just fresh into journalism. So we used to be taught about the 5 W's and the 1 H of journalism: what, how, when, why. Things have, I mean, you're just reporting the facts. Mm. But now social media is also reporting that facts. Mm. So journalism in today's world has become kind of little more difficult, because you just can't say that these are the facts and get away with it. You have to interpret it. You have to interpret it for the readers also. Right. Something which a layman who's not trained into journalism and who's not may or may not be very widely read, he will just present, he or she will just present the facts. But the journalist has to give the perspective also.
Correct.
So you have to give a proper perspective when you're writing a story.
Very true, very true. So, you know, again, now talking of devices, from the traditional print medium and television, today people are reading on multiple devices, you know, from their phones to tablets and whatever else you can think of. How is this changing the traditional print media and the television business?
See, again, if I talk first about the print, early morning, when I used to write in Hindustan Times or Times of India, we knew that there are 3 or 4 papers maximum which a reader will get to his home. Sure. So you are vying for his attention among those 3 or 4 papers. When it's such a television channel, it's again the 5 or 10 channels.
Correct.
He may flip from one channel to another. But the multimedia devices, the smartphone or the tablets or the laptops, you are also competing with the New York Times and the Guardian.
Correct.
And the news intervention as well.
Correct.
And the ABC.com as well, or XYZ, which might come up, and the personal blogs also. So the attention span of the reader is shifting very fast.
Correct.
So you have to be very best in your content wherever you are giving. You just can't take solace in the fact that you're writing for a very big brand or you are in a very big channel, because the reader, if he finds that this is something which is not connected to the ground reality, because he can also keep your reports, keep your documentaries, and see what the other person from a lesser known brand is giving up. So they have the option of moving on to that lesser known brand as well.
Okay. And let me ask you a question on this whole factor of fake news, you know, because of social media. And I was reading somewhere that fake news has become very, very big and very important and relevant.
In fact,
politicians are busy using fake news because they don't know how to discriminate. What are your thoughts on how do we counter or understand what is happening in fake news?
See, this is where I think journalists have an important role to play, because as a journalist, we are trained to figure out, to find out whether this particular information is true or not. And unfortunately, social media is being misused for that, because it takes very little to just write a fiction and pass it on as news. Mm. And by the time you realize that this is fake news, it circulates so widely. So as a citizen, I mean, like if you are a responsible person who's using a social media, whatever information you're getting, the first job is to correct, to verify that whether it's correct or not, and then pass it on through to your wall in on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or wherever you are. And also for journalists, we need to find out if something is uncomfortable, rather than being dismissive of that it's completely fake news. One needs to understand that there has to be another side of the story as well. They may go out, find out whether it's correct or not. And if it's correct, they should report that, yes, this is other side of the story. But if it's fake, if they find it fake, then they should come out very heavily on that. And authorities should also take note of this, that the websites or any of the media organizations, even the big ones, if they dole out fake news, I think strong punitive action should be taken so that people are discouraged from doling out fake news.
So, you know, you've almost answered the question I was going to ask you, but I'm going to ask you in any case. What role can government play in trying to sort out or stop this fake news? Because it can damage. Yes. And we've seen it damage so many times, even for something like the Citizens Amendment Act. I mean, so much fake news has been spread that it's created unnecessary issues.
Well, this is my personal opinion. The government, of course, there can be punitive action, but I think there needs to be some kind of a guideline or a framework or a website or some kind of platform where you can list all those organizations and the times they have given the fake news along with the link and other details of the fake news. So if I, as an editor-in-chief of News Intervention, if I know that if I dole out fake news and it's going to be listed over there along with the link and along with the other details of the fake news, I'll take every care and I'll tell my team not to give out those fake news, because it's going to be anyways listed and the readers might go and check. So this should be done. This could be one of the ways to counter it, along with the punitive actions. Like punitive action should be there.
Yes. So let's talk a little bit about now News Intervention. You know, when did you start it, and tell me about the areas that you focus on.
Well, I started it off a year and a half back.
Okay.
And my whole idea was, again, as I said, it was to intervene into the world of news where facts are distorted. A person may have any other perspective. There are many different ways of looking at things, but one should not distort the facts. So I thought wherever facts are distorted, like the CA, for instance, CA and NRC are being talked in the same breath. But the fact of the matter is that CA is completely different, NRC is completely different. And a lot of fake news has been generated. So News Intervention has intervened over there. We've carried out so many articles and news analysis. Again, like Kashmir, the entire discourse has been distorted right from the very beginning. So we've made out a point, we reach out to a lot of people who are connected to the grassroots and who understand about the Kashmir issue. Then we became the voice of the unheard. Okay. The stories that never come out, they never see the light of the day. They may not be very good writers, but they still have a very important story to say that should be discussed in the mainstream. So we're coming out with those issues. For instance, Balochistan issue. So Balochistan issue is, we talk about human rights violation everywhere except for Balochistan. And Balochistan is one place where gross human rights violation is being done by the Pakistan army. So we are bringing out those kind of news in News Intervention.
Very good. So, you know, as a journalist, you have been seeing and working with millennials. And millennials are the future. How are they reading the news, and how are you as a journalist accepting what they are looking for?
See, when I was a student during my school and college days, the options of reading news or watching news were very limited. I remember reading the international newspapers like the Washington Post or the New York Times or even a Guardian or the London Telegraph and all. I used to go to the libraries, make maximum efforts to understand what the international media is saying about one of the pressing issues of the country. It's not the case with the millennials. Millennials have it on their smartphone. They can easily access all the big brands, the economists, they can read any of the bigger brands, as well as the smaller brands like, say, the newer websites like My News Intervention and all, and the big brand, the mainstream media. So they have this opportunity to understand the multiple facets of a news that is being discussed all around in the world. And this is a very big opportunity. So rather than being forced to read and think in a way what a select few journalists or a select few writers would want them to do, they can form their own. It's a big, big opportunity for them.
Yeah. Very interesting. Very interesting. So let's move on to another avatar of Vivek, which is, you know, in the, you were the CEO of the Chitra Bharati Film Festival in 2018. How important are films for children as a means of information sharing?
Well, if you look at the way you form your opinion, films play a very important role. I'll just give you a personal example from mine. During 80s, when television and Doordarshan was one of the main mediums of entertainment. You remember Ramayana and Mahabharata,
the country used to come to a standstill.
The country used to come to a standstill. And most of us, people like of my age, who've grown up watching Mahabharata and Ramayana, all Raman and Sagars, Ramayana and Doordarshan, the first initiation towards Ramayana was through those serials as well. So, later on, when this entire Ram Janmabhoomi movement took up, we've given credit to politicians, we've given credit to everybody. But you have to give credit to Ramanand Sagar as well, because he was the one who introduced to Ramayana to a vast majority of the population. So in a way, these films, they have an impact on the way you think. Because I also remember watching Gurudat's classics on Doordarshan. They used to come. And the way my thought process have changed, I completely agree. And I completely understand that films have an impact in the subconscious of your mind. Okay. You may not be able to comprehend it all of a sudden, but at the back of the mind, they do create a major impact.
Very interesting. You know, you just spoke about Ramayana. We used to live in Singapore in those days. And I remember my father used to record every week.
Okay.
And then every month, someone would carry it to Singapore so that we could see the serial and show it to our children. You know. So you're right. It makes a big impact.
Big impact.
So let's move on to your book, The Chip in the Madrasa. Tell me about the book.
Well, the book was actually a film script.
Okay.
The entire story, I wrote it as a film script because I wanted that story should be made into a film. And unfortunately, I'm still struggling with a producer or a financier who could back this thing. So while I was like meeting out different financiers and producers and all, I thought, why not convert it into a novel? At least the story should reach out rather than, again, waiting and feeling frustrated that I couldn't make a film. I should go out and write it. The story should come out. The story is about a learned Maulvi who wants to introduce computer science, mathematics at his madrasa in this village. Mm-hmm. So this initiative of teaching Quran and Hadith along with computers, math, science, economics, physics, rattles the Wahhabis all across the world and the local politicians here in India as well. So they start thinking that if the Maulvi is able to influence the Muslim mind, we will not be able to control their mind and they will not be a vote bank for us. So what they do is they start intimidating the Maulvi, and Maulvi fights back. The way he fights back in a democratic fashion, that's the crux of the story and that's the crux of the novel.
That's very interesting. So one more question for you on the book before I move to some questions for you personally. What makes a good writer? I mean, you're a journalist, you're an author. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, apart from the binding theme, which you're writing in a making in a film, converting it into a film, or writing a book for that matter, I think subplots are very essential. The story of the film I've told you in one sentence, but to make a 2-hour film or to write a 300-page novel, why would you read that 300-page novel? The story, if the crux of the story is known. So the subplots are very important. And these subplots should be intertwined with each other. And every page, the reader should feel that there's something which is interesting and which is something which I need to turn around and read about it, because it will tell me something different, which is not given in the, if it becomes very predictive, if there are no subplots to hold the reader's attention, then I think the book does not work. So the subplots and the interconnection of those subplots along with the binding theme of the story, they are the crux of any of the good novel fiction book.
Fascinating. So let me move to a few questions for you personally. Yeah. You know, you've worked with the biggest publishing houses, newspapers, you're an author, you've got your own channel. Over the years, have you had any people who've had a strong influence on you? And if yes, what have you learned from them?
Obviously, there are very few people who have great influence. One was, of course, my father, who taught me that no work is small. You have to be on your toes all the time. You have to take passionately each of the work that you do. And then my Guruji, whom I fall back upon at times of distress or crisis. Another person who I'll like to mention over here, when I was in BSc Agriculture, for some reason, because I'm a writer, probably that's why, but my maths is not very good. So we had, during our agriculture, we had one course called Farm Engineering. It was kind of an engineering paper, and I was very nervous about it. And I thought, I don't know how am I going to clear that. But there was one teacher, Juneja sir, my seniors told that he's a wonderful teacher, and he taught that subject so beautifully that a person like me who was nervous about even whether I'm going to pass it or not, I scored 87 marks into that farm engineering. Mm-hmm. So what he taught me, and which I always till date, I keep on doing is, there are ways to simplify complex issues as well. And you have to make it in a way so that the person who is not interested, who does not have the flair for that, is able to comprehend and understand. See, for instance, I was not good at maths. I do not have that engineering bent of mine, sure. But he could make me understand a subject as difficult as farm engineering to a person like me who was not very well versed with that. So when I'm writing about complex issues, I now try to break it down to that level so that a person who is not willing to even read or understand that, he takes interest into that and he understands. So he had a very great influence on
that. That's very, 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 very good. So my next question to you is that, what would be three words that define Vivek?
Okay, so that's, let me think. One is that, of course, I'm very resilient. Okay. Despite the ups and downs, everybody faces ups and downs in their lives. Mm-hmm. But the important thing, I think, is to bounce back.
Correct.
And that has been my driving force. And I know that I'll bounce back. So that defines me.
Wonderful.
Second, I am trustworthy. I do not kind of hit below the belt, even to my detractors.
Correct.
And I do not feel that that should be the way forward. And third is that I am perseverant.
Okay.
Whatever I do, I just don't leave things midway, and I'm passionate about things. I think these are a couple of things which I have always followed all through my life.
Excellent.
And that's what keeps me going.
Wonderful. So my next question to you is on failure. And I ask this from every guest for two reasons. One is, I'm writing a book on failure, so therefore I love to get more perspectives. But more importantly, Indians don't teach children that it's okay to fail.
Yes, that's very important. Yes.
And we fail all the time.
Yes.
So my question to you is, what have been some of your learnings from your mistakes or your failures?
You see, personally, this is one of the things which I always discuss within my close friends and my family. Rather than succeed, we should teach how to fail.
Correct.
Because once you know how to fail, you know how to bounce back. And it's very normal, as you rightly said, it's very normal to fail. It's not that you'll come back. There's no roller coaster there's no smooth ride for everyone. There's always ups and downs. Thing life is like a roller coaster ride. So once you know how to fail, you know how to bounce back, how to gather your bits and pieces together, and how to come back again to the groove.
Correct.
So that's very important.
Correct.
And especially If I may look at my life, when I was with Hindustan Times, and then this social media things started coming up, and the online thing was just like kind of blooming at that point of time. So we made, I admit that we were not very prepared kind of to understand that this social media is going to come up. So we thought that this is something which is like kiddish. Again, the printed word carries a lot of weight. So we were not prepared. But once this social media took the world by storm, and we knew, as a journalist, I knew that this is here to stay. We are now taking things in our stride. We are using it to data mine, to understand different perspectives, and to incorporate into our own writings and broadcasts or documentaries. Those are the ways it is.
Okay, wonderful. So my last question to you, in a life well lived so far and a lot of achievements, do you have any regrets?
Not exactly. I don't have any regrets. But if I were to again change something, I would like to be better prepared for this onslaught of digital invasion. I thought I was slightly late in moving, or rather accepting that digital is come into our lives. Because again, I was a print journalist and I was very too engrossed into writing and seeing that byline the next morning, and the printed word, the papers and all stuff. So I was kind of late in understanding that this is going to come up. And then it came too sooner than I had expected. So if I were to like change things, I would want to be better prepared for this digital phenomena which has come.
Wonderful. Vivek, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you, and I wish News Intervention lots and lots and lots of success. Good luck.
Thank you so much. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.